Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Voice of Reason Radio. Your hosts, Chris Honholtz and Richard Story, joining you on this April 25th, 2020. Only 4 months into it, and well, it feels like about 10 years at this point, Rich. But, so we are grateful to have you with us. We are thankful that you continue to join us and tune in as you have done so for so many weeks. And really now, Rich, hey, it's our 4th year anniversary. I just thought of that.
Oh, this is our anniversary.
This is our anniversary episode. And people are going to get mad when they realize the topic we chose. It's like not that exciting. But in 4 days, it's 4 years that we've been doing this.
Well, that's really cool. And we've been blessed. And I just pray and hope that this show has blessed and edified those that listen, and that we've brought glory to God through our endeavors with this little podcast of ours.
Amen. I gotta say, you know, God is gracious, because for us to have been on 4 years, and I don't say this jokingly, but to still have a listener base of any amount, that's no, and again, I'm not trying to say that as a joke, that because podcasts, they kind of have a shelf life, and that, you know, after a while, look, there's stuff that I started listening to that I don't listen to anymore, not because I think there's something wrong with it, I just stop listening to it, so that anybody continues to listen, and that this program still goes on, and God has even allowed us to become part of a podcast community so that it can continue to have a platform. That's the graciousness of God, because two knuckleheads with just having a conversation every week for 4 years, thank you, Lord. You are too kind to allow Rich and I to continue to do this. And thank you all. We didn't even talk about this pre-show. It just hit me. thank you all for allowing us to be taking your time. You spend an hour and a half with us every week. And, well, that's your time. And thank you for allowing us to make use of that. So, wow, 4 years. That just doesn't seem possible.
And I think, if I remember correctly, I saw where someone had posted currently on iTunes, there are like over 1 million different podcasts of genres. So, but before I forget, because I had a really good, I think some of our listeners at least enjoy when you release a hyena laugh.
Oh, man, so, you had to say that. Now I'm never going to want to laugh.
So you're going to have to backtrack and ask me, like you do at the start of almost every show. You're going to have to backtrack and ask me, how am I doing?
Oh, boy. See, the fact that you set it up like that, now I'm afraid. All right, brother, so how are you doing this week?
Brother, I am completely wiped out, and I will be so glad when this 6-foot social distancing orders are over. Because it has affected my sleep like you cannot imagine. Hopefully, soon, my wife and I can actually push our beds back together, because I cannot sleep without her knee dug in my back.
Oh, that image.
Luckily, I have a bedroom large enough to where we can get that 6-foot perimeter between our beds.
Oh, that's great. I love it.
You were not expecting this, and obviously to our listeners, this was not part of the pre-show.
No, it wasn't. Oh, hey, you set me up on that one. Oh, that's bad. That's bad. And you know what? Suzanne is going to have to smack you for that one later. I'll make sure I get a message to her for it. I got to tell you, I will say this whole thing, there's got to be a psychological study done. Because I'm telling you, I was talking to my wife about this the other day. We were, as a people, were not made to be locked down like this. We just weren't. There's a reason why communion and fellowship is such an important thing in the scriptures, that God designed us not to be soloists, that we are to be together as a people. And just watching this world become even more bizarre, I'm telling you, some psychologist somewhere will have a field day studying the psychological damage that was done for this. It's going to be an there's going to be a grant, and there's going to be a study, and there's going to be books for decades written about this. I'm sure of it. Oh my goodness. So,
well, what I find most disturbing, not just because of the pandemic, but in general, is the fact that if you go online nowadays, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, and you see a headline, no matter how crazy, outlandish, or just bizarre it seems, your automatic response is to think, well, that must be true, because things are just that, you know, Babylon Bee, you know, is a satire site, but more times than not, I see one of their headlines and I think, well, that could be true. That could be true.
Well, in some cases, they've been prophetic. It's kind of scary. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, it's hard to do satire or comedy anymore because the insane has become the norm. I mean, I'm telling you, Rob Stiles down in Florida, get your people under control. That's all I'm telling you. I saw a headline about a guy, and this was from like Police One magazine, so it wasn't a comedy site. A guy pulling a pair of underwear over his head to rob a Walmart. It was like, what? Okay, Florida man, y'all are weird to begin with. That just took the cake. There's something just not right with society anymore. We are broken. We are very, very broken.
What's sad is if he was walking around Walmart wearing it,
I don't think anyone would notice.
Probably even noticed.
Well, if you've looked at any of the people that have shown up in Walmarts or any other store covering their faces with scuba gear, Halloween masks, 5-gallon water containers cut out to stick a head in, you wouldn't think anything about a pair of underwear.
You just think, well, he couldn't find a mask.
It's exactly it. Oh, my. It's just, it's insane. You know, what? I have a lot of respect. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, one of the ones I saw that has cracked me up, and we're not making light of the situation.
No, it's just that bizarre.
There is some actual funny occurrences that have come out of all of this, but people talking about going to the bank wearing a mask, asking for money. 10 years ago, they'd have been arrested. Today, they're asked to fill out a slip.
Yeah. It's like, oh, good. They'll throw you out if you come into the bank without a mask on. That's the scary part. You know, when they finally open up the casinos in my state, you cannot wear a mask on the casino floor. I got a funny feeling that rule ain't going to be enforced. It's going to be like, how dare you come in this casino without a mask on? I'm just telling you, it's going to be weird. And it's
knowing
like
Nevada, your state, Nevada, knowing your state, they will pass some law requiring you to wear a mask, but you will have to use an image of your own face on the outside of the mask.
See, now, okay. All you entrepreneurs, right now, Rich just gave you a great idea. Get a printer, and fabric, and print faces on those masks and start selling them. I'm telling you, some of you can do this. And you just made a bunch of money, and you can credit that one to Rich because he just gave you an idea. So get to working.
And I only require a 10% royalty fee.
I will say this. I have nothing but the absolute utmost respect for everybody, for our brethren who are covenantalists in their eschatology. I think I'm finding myself as a Christian, as a dispensationalist bordering on covenantalist. So, and I think I just confused everybody. as much as I respect I have for my covenantalist brethren, I got to be honest with you. As much as I was drifting toward covenantalism, 2020 is making me go, you know, maybe there's something about dispensationalism. It's like, God is doing something. I just don't know what. It's like he just kind of went, okay, here we go. Strap in. Anyway, all right. We really need to get to a topic or we're never going to get there. And we did promise a topic, so.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time we just rambled for an hour.
I'm telling you, it's, this world is coming apart at the seams more than ever before. And let me just say this, folks. I think I said this not long ago, and I know I did a Twitter live thing about it. It is entirely possible to be concerned about more than one topic at a time. So if you have a person in your life that is concerned about the rights of the American people being trampled on, it does not mean they want babies to die or old people or anyone. And my friends who are absolutely concerned about communism being forced down the throats of the American public because a person doesn't want people to die doesn't mean they don't care about our liberties. It is possible to actually have concerns that reach into multiple locations and just have a different perspective. So we don't need to kill each other over this, okay? Stop it. Stop it. Okay. And for that, we just lost half our listeners. So, because how dare you say you can have more than one concern. All right. That being said, I'm gonna make an effort at transitioning. We're talking about COVID-19 and states' rights and lockdowns. And one of the more interesting aspects of all this is my wife and I have been homeschooling parents since the day our children's birth, so over 16 years now. Guess what? All of America's homeschooling now. Welcome to the homeschool movement. And so, because of that, at just the right time, it seems, Harvard Magazine puts out an article, Rich, titled, dun, 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 The Risks of Homeschooling, for their June 2020 article or magazine.
Well, it is interesting that this article came out at the same time that basically everywhere across America, parents are forced to homeschool their children in some way, form, or fashion. I know a lot of school districts, or the teachers are actually still working, so mm-hmm. all of you that are claiming these teachers are getting off for months without pay, stop it, because mm-hmm. the vast majority are teaching via the internet or through mail and phone calls and conference calls. I know, because I've talked to some parents and I know some teachers, at least in my area, that's the way that it has been conducted, at least here in my little corner of the world in Mississippi. But let me backtrack real quick. And everyone more or less probably realizes that it is mandatory, meaning it is the law that you educate your children, whether it be homeschool, private school, public school. But I have a question, Chris. How far back does compulsory education go? Meaning when did it be, okay, this is the law, you have to send your children to school. When did all of that begin?
Well, from what I remember, and I know this is probably only a sliver of of the material that's out there available to read, I know that we were doing compulsory education in some before America was even a country, even in the colonies. And one of the things I was reading was they had public schools for basically kids who, you know, didn't have families, for orphans, and they had compulsory education in some colonies for the purpose of, you know, making sure these kids got taught so that they could read the Bible, they could read and write and other things. So I know at least as far back as the colonial era in America.
Well, and I had not, my notes are not organized as well as I'd like on this particular portion, but right before the show, it just kind of dawned on me and I got curious and I went to look up to see when did education become mandatory under the law. And I found a few things that I thought was really interesting. I just wanted to share because I'm hoping that someone else besides myself might find it interesting. I just wanted to share it. But it started, believe it or not, in ancient Judea, even before Plato wrote The Republic, popularized, excuse me, let me try that again. My tongue is tied. I apologize. In ancient Judea, even before Plato's The Republic popularized the idea of mandatory education, Jewish leaders required parents to provide at least an informal education for their children. In fact, rabbis founded a number of schools throughout the region and encouraged parents to send their children to school beginning at the age of six. Even during the Aztec time, which ruled modern-day Central Mexico in the 15th and 16th centuries, is widely credited as being the first nation to make education mandatory for all children. Keep in mind, that was the Aztecs. That is not anything that we would ever associate with what we know of Aztec civilization, but they were doing it. But the next is what I really found interesting. With the Reformation beginning in 1524, Martin Luther called for mandatory schooling laws to ensure that more Christians could read the Bible on their own. As the Reformation spread throughout Europe, so did the enactment of mandatory education laws. But while Scotland established an education mandate for the children of privileged families in 1496, this mandate didn't include commoners until the country enacted the School Establishment Act of 1616. I'll just share a couple more really fast. coming to the U.S. now, Massachusetts became the first U.S. state to enact a compulsory education law in 1852, having already passed a similar law in 1647 when it was still a British colony. The 1852 law required every city and town to offer primary school focusing on grammar and basic arithmetic. Parents who refused to send their children to school were fined and in some cases stripped of their parental rights and their children apprenticed to others. Prior to the Massachusetts law, in other states without such laws, education typically was provided by private schools run by churches. Since they also charged tuition, poorer children were excluded or received informal schooling at home. That would change during the immigration boom between the 19th and 20th centuries, as education was seen as the best way to assimilate immigrant children. Remember that for later in tonight's discussion. During this time, numerous states enacted compulsory education laws designed to take education out of the hands of parochial schools and primarily into the purview of state-run public schools. These actions were taken in a growing response to fear of immigrant values in the Catholic Church itself. The Supreme Court later overturned these so-called compulsory education laws that required students to attend public schools only. Another motivation was the growing public concern over child labor and the belief that compulsory attendance at school would discourage factory owners from exploiting children. In fact, Alabama temporarily repealed its compulsory education law in response to pressure from a large textile company in the state. So, partly they wanted to prevent child labor, and part that I found interesting was that they decided in the 19th and early 20th century that education was the best way to assimilate immigrant children into the United States. And that portion of that is kind of where tonight's topic is heading, mm-hmm. is about the assimilation of not just immigrant children into this country, but all children of this country.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's one of the funny things is I think not knowing our history, and I knew a little bit of that. I think I may somewhat recall things like Plato's Republic and stuff like that about mandatory education. But the thing with when it comes to education, we are used to in this society the idea of public schools when you have a kid at 5 years old, they go to kindergarten, and you just keep putting them in school. And so the idea that there's ever been anything that looked different for that, for whatever the reasons, is foreign to us, because for about the last 100+ years, how we see public education is kind of how it's been run. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of interesting history involved with public education. Didn't used to have a teacher's degree to be a teacher, for example. There were people that wanted to control what was taught in the schools and had certain philosophical ideas about what education should actually eventually accomplish, which we're seeing some of that today. And that's why teachers' colleges were made. Now, before we go too far with this, Rich, I just want to say something before anybody starts getting bent. And I understand why they would feel that way. I have nothing but honest to goodness admiration for someone who has gone into the career field to educate kids. I really do. You're going into a very difficult industry. 99% of the time, that from what I've seen, the people who do it genuinely love kids, want to teach, want to help the next generation of kids be intelligent, well-read, accomplished, so they can make a life for themselves. So I have nothing but respect for the teacher and teaching industry, or I should say nothing but respect for teachers. And I believe there are even administrators and schools who have not bowed the knee to the progressivists as much as they've been able to, and seek to truly educate, to teach things. So I want to say that everything we're going to talk about this article that comes out of Harvard Magazine, is not in any way, shape, or form to insult or offend anyone who's in the who is a teacher, who has is trying to be salt and light in a public school, who's trying to do their very best to teach. I don't want that in any way, shape, or form to be what's taken away. I suspect some people will still do that, but I am telling you up front, that's not what we're doing. Go ahead, Rich.
Let me just add at this point, being where I live, it is still predominantly a conservative state. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are progressive influences and liberal ideologies that have infiltrated our public school system. But I do know that, beyond all of the federal and state regulations, and you have to learn this and you have to teach that, and in order for your school to get funding, you have to have X number of students pass this competency test and all that. I'm not going to say who or where, but I know a teacher that was forced to teach evolution. And prior to going into that subject, the teacher told the students, I've got to teach you this because it is state law. And you've got to know the right answers to pass these tests. But once all that's over, you forget everything that I'm going to say because it's not true.
Yeah.
And this was a public school teacher, but they have to do it basically, behind closed doors. And certain individuals and groups, if they knew who and where this was, they probably have a swarm of lawyers,
Yeah.
As soon as the schools could open back up, swarming in there. But there are some really true Christian men and women that are teaching in public schools that are trying to manage that balance between what they're told to teach that goes against scripture, but still trying to instill in the students that they need to look and think for themselves.
Exactly. So we want to put that out there, because this article from Harvard Magazine is a direct punch in the face to the homeschooling families in America. It is a full-on punch you knock your teeth out type of article. And it is the reason we're going over it is Rich was asking me when we decided to do the show, what was the point of discussing this? As Christians, we know the world is against us. It's not like we don't know that. So an article like this doesn't shock us. But some of the points made in this article, they're points that have been used for decades now to attack the homeschooling movement. My contention is these articles and these statements, they're filled with presuppositions, allegations, and assertions that most of the time have no basis in truth. Or if they do, it is a sliver of the actual story. And there are answers and arguments against all of it. But the average person will look at go, oh, Harvard Magazine, that's pretty, you know, Harvard's a, you know, very highfalutin Ivy League school. These people are intelligent. And they're going to look at this article and go, wow, I didn't really think about that when it comes to homeschooling. Maybe there are problems. And I want to challenge our listeners. I looked at these and I picked some of the issues that come from this article. And Rich saved us all the migraine-inducing headache of actually reading the 80-page article from which this Harvard Magazine article draws its material. So Rich will have some input on that. And you might actually find that Rich and I have slightly varying perspectives throughout this. So, you know, understand that, you know, this is not just a monolithic discussion. But I want our listeners to challenge things that they are presented with. That's the whole point of this discussion tonight. Don't take something that's handed to you, I don't care what the source is, and just read it and go, yep, must be true, and through that filter move forward. Read intelligently. Read with the intention to question the who, what, when, where, why, and how. Read with the intent to learn what's being said and what's not being said. So that when you are presented with these arguments, especially if you're a Christian who does want to homeschool or is homeschooling, and if somebody comes to you and goes, CC, Harvard thinks it should be banned, you can challenge this. This is challengeable material. It is not without error. It's got a lot of error. And in my opinion, some bald-faced lies. Go ahead, Rich.
I just want to add, and please, don't just read the title that is circulated.
Yes, please.
Actually read the article and then apply what Chris said. I have seen way too many times people commenting and sharing and commenting about an article based solely on the title of the article without ever having actually read it. Believe it or not, among conservatives and liberals both, there's a ton of clickbait out there to where they just want you to click and read it so they get the hits or they get the advertising dollars for their blog or their article being circulated. You need to actually click it and read it for yourself, because on both sides of the spectrum, there's some very, very misleading titles out there when it comes to blogs and news sources and news articles and everything else. And just kind of clarify, brother, the original paper, this was a paper submitted to the Arizona Law. I don't know if it was a board or what, but it was
the law review.
It was like an 80-page treatise on the dangers of homeschooling, and the author, I can't remember this professor's name, but what is her name?
The author of the Harvard article is Erin O'Donnell, but she quotes extensively from Elizabeth Barthollet, a Wasserstein Public Interest Professor of Law and Faculty Director of the Law School's Child Advocacy Program. So she's the one that...
Okay.
Barthollet is the one that wrote the 80-page paper.
Yeah, and in it, the let me just say this up front. The Harvard Law article really truly captures the essence of what her motivations are.
Yeah.
And regardless of what is and what is not substantial in this lady's paper, the fact is that she did write it with a bias against all forms of religion and conservatives, because reading through the 80-page document, there's way too many times she uses these words in a negative tone. Entire aura, essence, underlying thought of this paper is anti-conservative, anti-Christian, anti-homeschool. But, and we might hit some of the points, there are some legitimate concerns that she brings forth in this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with her. I don't agree with most of what public school is doing and teaching and the way it's run today, if I had my children's education to do over, me and my wife would have found a way to homeschool them. I'm speaking as a parent who my three children, all three, went through the public school system. And that's kind of my view on this. And I just kind of want to put it out there. Anything that I say that may seem to disagree with Chris is not so much that I truly believe it or I truly disagree with Chris. I just want to kind of bring a little bit different approach mm-hmm. to the subject to encourage everyone to think and to examine and to be a Berean when it comes to topics and subjects such as this. And, you know, not just the Bible. The Bible commands us to research and study and to dig into things. And I think that applies to all aspects of our life, not just the Bible.
Amen. And what a shock. Read something with the intention to actually learn. Whether you agree or disagree with the premise and the conclusion, read to learn. Because guess what? Sometimes even a person with whom you vehemently disagree, you will learn something and go, hey, I didn't know they thought that. That is one area I might actually agree with them on. That's possible to do, people. That is possible to do. Okay. We're about a half hour in, and we really need to get going on this. So I'm not going to read this whole article, but I'm going to read the first few paragraphs here because it sets the tone for the rest of the article, and then we'll hit some of the points that I believe where she's making her argument, and Rich is going to be interjecting because he knows at least the 80-page paper. I honestly didn't think I would have that kind of patience. I guess I'm going to have to do a Rich and actually spend some time reading that. But I spent some time looking through this article, and like you said, I believe this is a good synopsis. So the article from Erin O'Donnell in Harvard Magazine, it's listed as for their May-June 2020 edition, and it starts off saying, a rapidly increasing number of American families are opting out of sending their children to school. I'm going to stop that right there. I find that an interesting way to phrase that, opting out. So keep going. Choosing instead to educate them at home. Homeschool kids now account for roughly 3-4% of school-age children in the United States, a number equivalent to those attending charter schools and larger than the number currently in parochial schools. So go ahead.
Did you say 3-4% or 34%?
3-4. So I apologize if I didn't speak clear. 3-4. So as many kids in charter schools in America are also about that number being educated at home. Article goes on, yet Elizabeth Barthollet, Wasserstein Public Interest Professor of Law and Faculty Director of the Law School's Child Advocacy Program, sees risks for children and society, in homeschooling, and recommends a presumptive ban on the practice. Bam! Right out the gate, punch in the mouth. It's too risky. We need to ban it. Homeschooling, she says, not only violates children's rights to a meaningful education, something we'll talk about, and their right to be protected from potential child abuse, that came out of left field, but may keep them from contributing positively to a democratic society. Rich, did you know that my two boys are at risk of not having a meaningful education, that they could potentially be abused in my home, and they may never contribute positively in our society? Did you know that my doing that has put them at such great risk?
I had no idea. I would like to clarify one thing in the statement in this article. She did not just flat out want to ban homeschool. She also went into ways of very, very strictly regulating homeschool and basically the government controlling homeschool education to the extent of actually having in-home inspections as if you had been accused of child abuse or child neglect, and you have the Child Protective Services come in and examine and observe what's going on within the home. That 80-page paper went into great detail outlining it wasn't just a flat-out ban, but her ideas and proposals of how to strictly
regulate,
monitor,
yeah.
Yeah, regulate the homeschooling portion if parents so desired. But like I said, she was very, very adamantly anti, not just anti-Christian, but anti-religion of any sort. But I'd like to say one thing. For Christians that homeschool, if the parent or parents are really truly Christians, neglect and abuse would never be an issue.
Yeah, no, and I agree with that. And I think it would be fair to say that if we were to ask Miss Bartholet, well, okay, can we continue to homeschool until your regulations are put into place? She would say absolutely not. She wants it shut down now until the regulations are in place and all the checks and balances are there. I think that's why there's that recommendation for a presumptive ban. Just stop it right now. It's too risky. And really interesting considering the culture that we're in, how we are shutting things down because of potential risk. That's interesting that they're bringing that into the article. So let me read this one more paragraph and then we'll talk about some of these issues. Quoting Bartholet, we have an essentially unregulated regime in the area of homeschooling. Stop. That's a bold-faced lie. Rich was looking at some of those things earlier, and I know that there are some states that are heavily regulated and some states that allow parents a lot of freedom. So that's a bald-faced lie to say it's unregulated. So we have an unregulated regime, biased language, by the way, in the area of homeschooling, Bartholet asserts. All 50 states have laws that make education compulsory, and state constitutions ensure a right to education. Quote, but if you look at the legal regime, there we go again, legal regime governing homeschooling, there are very few requirements that parents do anything, end quote. Even apparent requirements such as submitting curricula or providing evidence that teaching and learning are taking place, she says, aren't necessarily enforced. Stop, bald-faced lie. HSLDA, Homeschooling Legal Defense Association, whom she excoriates in this article, can tell you account after account of parents who have basically had their children taken away because they homeschool. So that's a bald-faced lie. Okay, let me finish the paragraph and then we'll go forward. Only about a dozen states have rules about the level of education needed by parents who homeschool, she adds. In other words, parents, you're too dumb to do it on your own. That means, effectively, that people can homeschool who've never gone to school themselves, who don't read or write themselves. Worst case scenario. In another handful of states, parents are not required to register their children as homeschooled. Gasp. And they can simply keep their kids at home. Rich, this... You said it yourself. I know you read the 80-page paper. There is a ton of bias and presupposition in this and assertions that are absolutely indefensible. And I know you're going to push back on it, some of it, and that's fine. I want people to recognize this. There's a ton of bias in what's said here. It's unregulated regime, uneducated parents that, there's no enforcement. This is all baloney. There's nothing here that's true about what she's saying.
Well, let me just tell you this. I know almost zero when it comes to homeschooling because I've never done it. And you are basically an expert at it because you and your wife have been doing it for 16 years. I think that would qualify you as being somewhat of an expert when it comes to the subject because I'm sure you and your wife have dealt with almost anything that's imaginable when it pertains to that subject. But prior to our show tonight, I did a little research, and when it comes to the unregulated part, I will say this. I forget exactly all the states listed, but there are like 10 or 15 states that are considered the most liberal in the country when it comes to homeschooling, meaning allowing parents to take control and conduct it the way they want to, teach what they want to, in the way and form that they feel like is best for them and their family. My state, Mississippi, is one of them, but they do have to register that they're homeschooling. They do have to submit reports to the state mm-hmm. to ensure that their children are being taught. And I don't know all the ins and outs, but I know that they have to submit, what's being taught, how long their homeschool sessions last. there are regulations, even in the most liberal homeschooling states, that the state is, you know, making parents adhere to make sure that they are actually educating their children. So her statements on all that, I don't know if she just assumed it or pulled it out of the air, but 5 minutes online mm-hmm. with two or three websites, and she could have read for herself that that is not true. And I don't recall that portion being quoted in the 80 page, but I wouldn't be surprised if that did not actually come directly from it, because she did use a lot of false dichotomy in that paper and in this article, that, you know, she's just basically pulling assumptions out of nowhere, or she's basing it on information that's 100 years old. You know, sometimes even, you know, especially in today's day and age with politicians, it's not so much what they say, it's, you know, you have to ask, okay, what did you mm-hmm. mean by that?
Yeah.
And in this situation with this article, she may be quoting facts, but the question is, what year did those facts come from?
Right. And so let's do this. Let's go through that second paragraph where the article talks about really three main issues. And they're the issues that I can promise you, you ask anybody that's done, you know, one of these days we're going to have to get our friend Israel Wayne back on here. We had him on the show when we were with Tony back in those days the early days of our podcasting. And we had him on. I should really get him back on the show to maybe respond to some of this. I think it'd be very interesting. But anybody like our friend Israel Wayne, who has been in the homeschooling movement for decades, could respond to any one of these quite easily, because they are the same. And I know you said it was in the 80-page article, Rich, but I am shocked Harvard did not bring up, what about socialization? Ugh. How that got missed in the Harvard article, I don't know. But anyway.
That they didn't bring up what?
What about socialization? You're not socializing your children. I know you said it's in the 80s. Yeah, I can guarantee you every homeschooling parent chains their children in a basement, never lets them see the light of day. They never talk to another person ever. Right. Anyway, sorry, I get a little hostile at some of this. So I know that's coming out. I apologize. I'm going to try to be balanced.
let me just say this real quick. I don't know how it operates in any other state, and I barely understand how it operates in my own state, but I do know that our state passed laws that made it mandatory that if you're a homeschool parent, whatever school is nearest you, they have to allow your homeschooled student to participate mm-hmm. in sports, or, you know, like football, baseball, basketball. They have to allow them to participate if you want them to be able to, you know, join a local sports team.
Yeah.
And that is part of what our state, you know, that's mandatory. You have to allow them. That kind of goes counter opposite of what her claims are about, you know, they're not socialized and all this.
Well, I can assure you the anti-homeschooling movement, if they could exclude homeschoolers from everything, and they've tried, they would force homeschoolers into a position where they couldn't socialize, to say, see, they're not socializing. But anyway, let's move forward, because we're already like 43 minutes into this. Obviously, we're going to run long, folks. So what was one of the first things that they said? That children, she says homeschooling violates children's right to a meaningful education. That one I find just a really interesting statement. Meaningful education. Who defines meaningful?
Well, obviously she thinks she has
exactly.
the education, the you know, the status and everything else to define meaningful. But to give her the benefit of the doubt, you know, there's mm-hmm. a lot of public schools that are not providing a quote-unquote meaningful education, and they have teachers that have went to college for 4 years and did their 1 year or 2 year of teacher assistant training and whatnot. But I will say this, among the 3-4% of homeschool children, I'm not naive enough to not realize that among that percentage, there are probably a few that are not receiving a meaningful mm-hmm. education. So, you know, that's one of those that she kind of slaps it on everyone that's homeschooling, but I can see situations to where she may be right in a few incidences.
We can't
just automatically assume, you know, that out of the 4%, and I don't know what 4% of ever how many school children there are in this country, I would imagine it would be a pretty large number. But you know as well as I do, out of that 4%, there are some that are not receiving meaningful education, and that'll kind of come back around in a few minutes when I make another statement that you're not going to like.
And the thing is that it's not to say, as you've pointed out, Rich, that there are some parents who don't do a good job educating their kids. We live in a sinful society. Whether it's in a public school, in a charter school, or a homeschool, there are going to be those kids who get neglected, who don't get taught. The question becomes, who defines, number one, what is meaningful? She, as you pointed out, she decides. She decides what's meaningful. And what's happening in the homeschool clearly isn't meaningful. In fact, later in the article, in the Harvard article, it talks about the fact that, compulsory education is something that's happened, as part of our history, and it's because they're supposed to be productive participants of society. And she says, quote, "But it's important that children grow up to exposed to community values, social values, democratic values, ideas about non-discrimination and tolerance of other people's viewpoints." That's what she's describing as a meaningful education, not reading, writing, arithmetic. Tolerance and non-discrimination. In other words, if you're in a public school, well, you get exposed to that, but you clearly don't get exposed to that at home. Go ahead, Rich.
I was just going to say, I find it interesting. She used the word democratic. What she meant to say was the Democrat way of viewing things, because the other red flags in that statement were tolerance, which we all know is code word for accepting new lifestyles and transgenderism and homosexuality. And anytime I've ever read or heard or seen anything when it comes to the word tolerance, that's what they mean today.
Yeah.
And, I can't assume that that's what she meant, but based on everything I've read that she put out, I can make a pretty educated guess that that is what she actually did mean when she said tolerance.
Well, let's go back to the preceding paragraph. She claims that up to 90% of homeschoolers are driven by conservative Christian beliefs and seek to remove their children from mainstream culture. Interesting. And that, as she puts it, some of the parents are, quote, from extreme religious, that some of these parents are, quote, extreme religious ideologues, end quote, who question science and promote female subservience and white supremacy. Talk about going to the extreme. In her mind, that what she's saying here is tolerance, non-discrimination, and all of those things, that's a meaningful education. And if you're at home in an extremely religious ideological environment, you're not getting that, quote, meaningful education. That's why she thinks public education is meaningful and homeschooling's not. That's what makes the difference. Because if you have a parent who is someone who believes that what the Bible says, like the earth is somewhere between 6 and 10,000 years old, that the evolution is not true, that God made us as male and female, that God has roles for men and women, you are an extreme religious ideologue, and you are depriving your child of a meaningful education. So that's why, go ahead, just one sec, Rich, and then I'll give it to you. That's why I find that particular statement a huge problem, and yet, without questioning what she's saying, somebody might think, well, maybe they're not getting enough of an education. So go ahead. I'm so sorry.
I was just thinking that, with the exception of the white supremacist portion, it sounded to me like she was pretty much describing biblical Christianity because, for one thing, the Bible teaches us we're not to be tolerant. We're not to be tolerant of sin. We're not to be tolerant of allowing worldly influences around our children. We're not to be tolerant of what the world says is right or wrong. We're to adhere to what God says, not what this professor says. And that also shows her ignorance of Christianity to an extent. And without knowing that she was, and I don't know if she's an atheist, I can only assume it based on some of her writings, but she would basically fall in the category of intersectionality and a woke Christian mm-hmm. or a socialist Christian, because, you know, honestly, that is what social Christianity teaches, is to be tolerant of all of that and to be open-minded when it comes to certain worldly viewpoints. But I don't know what she meant by white supremacist, but she obviously, if she was a Christian, would fall in the egalitarian view of women's roles, and mm-hmm. probably would have absolutely no problem whatsoever with a church entirely run by women.
Well, considering that this particular article, and I pulled the PDF up a little while ago, the PDF was of the actual 80-page articles from 2019, and this is, of course, you know, posted here in Harvard Magazine the following year. So most likely, when she argues white supremacy, she's arguing probably from our current view of what racism is, which is the whole critical theory. If you don't tear down anybody of a white male heterosexual background and lift up people of color, women, etc., that critical theory thing that we've talked about on the program before, that's defined as white supremacy, because it's all about maintaining the current system. So I would imagine she, with her being in this particular writing this article this way, she's probably arguing from that perspective. So, but the reason I bring that up is you as a Christian, if you want to teach your child at home, if you are not teaching a progressivist leftist mindset, you are being told you're depriving your child of a meaningful education, according to Elizabeth Barthollet. That's why she wants a presumptive ban. She doesn't want Christian values being taught. She wants progressivist ideals being taught. And she thinks conservative religious viewpoints will destroy America rather than build up people who are committed to serving the Lord and committed to believing right and wrong and doing what is good and right, etc. She wants this nebulous thing that the progressivists like to play with. So that was the first one that I found really interesting. The second one go ahead, Rich.
Let me just add this real quick, which actually goes back to what I was reading at the start of the show, just like in the late 19th and early 20th century, when compulsory education was being pushed because they wanted to do what? Do you remember?
Assimilate.
Assimilate. But now, instead of trying to prevent a Catholic influence or non-Protestant viewpoints into education, the powers that be, you know, this country is basically split now between liberals and conservatives, and you got varying degrees on both sides, but the liberals want to assimilate our children into thinking along their ways of thinking when it comes to their liberal ideologies, and that's the way they want to accomplish it, is through public school. Yeah. This is one of those cases, you know, it's not just what this woman wrote, but you have to dig and read and research and learn what she truly believes so you can somewhat understand her motivation behind mm-hmm. just like that 80-page paper. And what's dangerous is you get someone like this lady that's in a position of authority, that she's, you know, has the name Harvard out beside her name. She's a professor, you know, and you know, for the most part, people are going to think, well, this is a very, very well-educated individual. You know, she teaches, she's on the faculty, she must truly know what she's talking about. And sadly, that's part of the problem. Mm-hmm. People are going to assume, because she has all these letters out behind her name, or she is associated with such and such university, she must truly be an authority on this subject.
Exactly. And the sad thing is that's a logical fallacy. I think it's called appeal to authority. You appeal to the authority rather than the argument, determining whether it's actually solid. So people who do this, who don't ask these questions and assume on the basis of the person's authority that they must be right, that's where the problems come in. So let's talk about the second issue that this article brings up. Not only does it violate a child's right to a meaningful education, I found that kind of interesting, the whole that you have a right to a meaningful education, because compulsory and right don't typically go together. A right is something the government can't touch, not usually something the government can compel. So I thought that was rather interesting that this person who is writing for a law review is talking about you have a right to something, but it must be compelled. A bit contradictory, in my opinion. But the second thing was that the child has a right to be protected from potential child abuse. Potential child abuse. I found that just absolutely astonishing in an article about education. See, the point that is being discussed here is, what are the problems of a homeschool education? So why does Bartholet immediately jump to something that's not an issue of education? Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that child abuse doesn't happen. But, and it doesn't happen, and I won't even say it doesn't happen in homeschool environments. What I find interesting is that on a article that discusses education, we go from meaningful education to child abuse. And I find that just an absolutely amazing assertion on Ms. Bartholet's part, that not only does public school need to be where every child goes to get a meaningful education, there's an assumption that every child that is in a homeschool environment is at risk of child abuse. And Rich, I'll defer to you on the 80-page article, but in this article, the appeal is a book that was written by someone who had been in a homeschool environment, who wasn't really educated and was bullied by her brother and worked in her father's business, where she commonly got injured. And the quote in the article is, Bartholet doesn't see the book as an isolated case of a family that slipped through the cracks. Quote, that's what can happen under the system in effect in most of the nation. So she's putting out there that in all likelihood, every Christian home is a potential hotbed of child abuse. And then she makes the argument that the reason children need to have public schooling instead of homeschooling is, in the public schools, teachers are mandatory reporters. So if they think there's so much as a hint of child abuse going on, the teachers must immediately report it and get Child Protective Services involved. Yet in homeschooling environments, well, parents can't be checked for child abuse. We don't know what's going on in there. At least if they go to a public school, that's an avenue of protection, because if we think something's going on, we can get in there and get involved. And I get to a certain extent where you might think, okay, if the kid's being harmed and nobody knows, that's bad. In fact, one of the things that's kind of gotten my goat a little bit, because I see it so much over this whole COVID thing where all the kids have been sent home, is there is a constant steady drip of memes or links or comments on social media. Please remember to pray for the children who going to school was their only safe place. As if every child now back at home is now in danger of child abuse. And I found that just an amazing assertion. Number one, Rich, I got to defer to you on the 80-page article, but the Harvard article cites a book by a single person about their particular experience. And Bartholet says, see, that's just an example of what's going on. And that's rather terrifying.
Well, I didn't research the book, and I think she cites other sources, but just on the Harvard article alone, when she speaks of potential abuse, well, let's look back again in history when it came to the reasons why compulsory education was put into effect. It was to keep children from being child labor in factories, mm-hmm. and on farms, and all these other different means of cheap labor for a business owner. Well, you know, that is a legitimate concern.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to potential abuse, well, there's potential abuse whether the child is at school or at home.
Yep.
And, you know, just like you said, with praying for the children at home, I have seen several articles. None have really delved into it really deep. But one concern was, you know, well, these children go to school. A lot of times that's the only real good meal they get each day,
mm-hmm.
is the meal they receive at school. During this lockdown, parents are more stressed. They don't know how to deal with it. Children are at more risk of a parent with anger issues striking out and abusing them or hitting them or, you know, not taking care of them in the way that they need to. I can see there are, you know, some legitimate reasons for her statement about potential abuse, but she goes way above and beyond what is rational in her defining that, because in that article, she makes it sound like that, you know, if you're a homeschooled child, you're at more risk of being abused than if you would be at public school. Mm-hmm. I went to public school and my kids went to public school. Let me tell you, they were bullied. They were bullied by, you know, other students, upperclassmen, even sometimes teachers were, mm-hmm. spoke and acted in a way that they should not have been doing. They heard words come out of teachers' mouths that they never should have heard, especially at the ages that they were. When my children come home asking me what such and such word means, I mean, bullying is going to happen at public school. That's not an if. That is just a matter of who you are and when. And if you're smaller than the other ones in your class, you can just about guarantee that child's going to be bullied. Mm-hmm. But when she goes into talking about other checks and measures for children being abused, well, I got news for her. If you show up more than one time at a local hospital in a given time and your child has bruises or a broken arm or a broken finger, child services are going to come check you out and see why that child keeps getting injured, no matter how many times you use the excuse that he or she fell off a skateboard.
Exactly.
There are other civil authorities and civil means that people are going to ask questions and wonder why this child is acting this way or why this child keeps getting injured, whether it's your local doctor, your local hospital, a neighbor or a family member. Mm-hmm. It's not like that. She is painting a picture that homeschooled children are locked in a cage, that they're not being taken care of physically, they're not being taught, that the parents are just letting them run around like they want to all day, every day, not learning anything, or they're sitting in front of a television watching TV or playing video games. And, you know, the parents just lazy and mm-hmm. don't want to fool with sending them to school. That, to me, that's the essence of what she's trying to say in that portion when it comes to her talking about potential abuse, because she's making an assumption and applying it to everyone under the sun that homeschools.
Yeah, and I'm going to bring back another point that you just brought up. Barthelet's argument is they're safer at school because, well, if they come in bruised or battered, we can mandatory report. Fair enough. That's a fair thing, because some abusers have been caught that way. No question. Number one, that didn't prevent the child abuse. Okay, that's number one issue. Number two, at least in the Harvard article, and Rich, I'll defer to you if she ever mentions it in the 80 page. I doubt it. I don't see any discussion of, in public schools, as you said, kids are constantly abused. They've been abused since the day the school started. They're picked on, they're beat up, get their keisters kicked after school. Boys constantly harassing girls sexually these days. And how many more news reports need to come out about teachers who have seduced their students? Okay, remember, these are the teachers that are the mandatory reporters. Again, I said at the beginning, I have nothing but respect for teachers. And I believe every one of them have, you know, that go into that, for the vast majority, I should say, with the intent to take to protect those kids, teach those kids, and help their futures. And I believe that. But if homeschool environments are so dangerous because you can't tell if there's abuse going on in the home because there's no mandatory reporters, where was that protection for countless young men and women who have been sexually abused by their teachers?
If I remember correctly, the only portion she addressed with that is that I think she acknowledged that bullying and abuse goes on at public school, but there are other authoritative figures within reach that those children can reach out to and report what's going on and something can be done about it. Whereas in a home, all they have is the one parent or the two parents.
Right.
And she asserts that, you know, if the child's being abused, both parents are automatically okay with it.
Well, and again, there's an assertion that I have a problem with, but if we want to play the anecdotal game like she does with this book Educated by Tara Westover, how many students have talked about they talked to a teacher and the teacher dismissed it, that the person bullying was like the quarterback of the football team, got ignored? You know, I mean, stuff like this happens. Go ahead.
Well, just on that portion, I know for a fact, more times than not, if a child is being bullied or if they are being abused by a teacher, they will shut down and not tell anyone anything.
Right.
Because in some way, form, or fashion, they will blame themselves for what happened. Because in a situation, if it's a teacher sexually assaulting a student, that teacher is an authority figure and will use manipulation and any other type of wording you want to place on it that, well, I'm a teacher, you're just a student, who do you think they're going to believe?
Right.
And when it comes to bullying, a lot of times, and it goes back to umpteen decades ago when I was still in school, you know, if you go tell on somebody for bullying you, then all of a sudden you're a snitch or, you know, you're weak or you're called names, and you may not be getting bullied from that same person, but you're getting verbal abuse from others around you for telling on person, you know, over here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's when it comes to school bullying and things that are going on, and I'm sure now it's far worse than anything I knew of, even when my children were in school. But I do know for a fact that there are more times than not that if a child's getting bullied or picked on, or, you know, a teacher's making inappropriate comments or whatnot, that child more times than not just doesn't tell anyone or doesn't report it.
Right. And we're not making the case that somehow public school is just this rampant, dangerous place and homeschooling is the absolute most safest place. What we're saying is it is absolutely hypocritical to allege that children who are homeschooled are in a more dangerous environment while barely giving acknowledgement, that this is rampant in schools throughout the country. It is hypocritical to, you know, look with a magnifying glass or an electron microscope and look for all the little places where this might be going on in the homeschooling movement and barely acknowledge that it exists within the public schools. So this is why we bring this up. You see that, you know, the average person reads this, they go, you know, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. I just bumped my mic all over the place. Sorry, folks. Without any question of, well, wait a minute, what about all the stuff that goes on in the schools? That's not to say that nobody thinks of these questions. Nobody's thought to ask that question. But the average person reading this, are they asking themselves those questions, or are they just simply being swayed by Bartholet's argument because it's coming from a college professor being quoted in Harvard Magazine, talking about these dangerous things that we do see on the evening news? Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people swayed by that argument. So what we're challenging here on these issues is not to say, oh, public school is far more dangerous. There needs to be an examination. If you're going to examine one, examine both and show the problems in both. And then let's talk about how those issues are dealt with. But certainly don't just destroy one as a potential hotbed of you know, child abuse violence and ignore what's going on in the public schools, because that is what's called bias. Okay. Now, the last thing that I saw is she talks about how what we're doing can keep people from being contributing positively to a democratic society. And she, what I found interesting is that she says that in light of the fact she excoriates Homeschool Legal Defense Association, basically calls them, you know, a lobbyist group, and that that there's no political opposition to them. That's a bald-faced lie. I tell you right now, they're in court lots of times. Okay, so they are not simply just bulldozing through, as she asserts in the article. But then she turns around and says, because remember, what is HSLDA and other groups doing? They're fighting for the rights of the parents. Parents have a right to raise their kids according to their conscience, according to their beliefs. That's what parents do. They're your children. And so the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, they are fighting for that. So you as a parent are raising your child to contribute positively to society because you're teaching them according to your dictates and your beliefs. And if you're a Christian, that's according to the Word of God. And you're teaching them to love others, to put God first, to, you know, help those in need, to live a God-honoring life, in holiness and righteousness, to show forgiveness. Gee, it sounds awfully positive to me, but according to Miss Bartholet, that's not positive because it's intolerant, it's sexist, it has discrimination attached to it, it's white supremacy. So her mindset is, they say, Bartholet maintains that parents should have, quote, very significant rights to raise their children with the beliefs and religious convictions that the parents hold. Stop. Catch what she said. Very significant rights. Not complete right, because that would mean you then become what she says as the issue is, do we think that parents should have 24/7 essentially authoritarian control from over their children from 0 to 18? I think that's dangerous. She doesn't want you to have complete authority in your child's life. She believes, as a parent, you're too dangerous. You may make decisions that, in keeping the child home, deprive the child of a meaningful education, could potentially be bringing your child back home into a violent child abuse environment, that you are not teaching them to be tolerant and non-discriminatory and allowing women to prosper and all these other things. She thinks that you as a parent have significant rights, and I say that in air quotes, significant rights to raise them with their religious conviction. But if you have complete authority, 24/7 authoritative control of your child, you are dangerous. And then she says, I think it's always dangerous to put powerful people in charge of the powerless, to give powerful ones total authority. Oh, wow. We are dangerous, Rich.
But isn't that exactly what she's wanting to do, is to place children in public schools under complete authority under the state or under the federal government? I know we're running close on time, but there's a couple points I want to mention real quick. In her 80-page argument, she never addresses the quality of education of homeschoolers versus public school individuals. I know, because I researched this not long ago for something else, 2 out of every 3 public school students fail out of college. They never graduate, and most never make it beyond their freshman year. If that's the case, what in Sam Hill are public schools teaching? And I've asked, and I've had teachers tell me, they're not teaching their children to study. They're not teaching them to succeed in college. They're just doing what they can to get them out of high school.
Yeah.
That is completely opposite of it, of the way it was when I was in high school. They taught us to think. They taught us how to study. They taught us in a way to prepare us for college. And obviously that is not what goes on anymore. I can remember economics class. I can remember home ec. I can remember all these other skill type lessons that we learned in high school, how to manage a checkbook, how to balance a budget, you know, how to calculate finances. they're not teaching that anymore. All they teach now is learn this to pass this test so we can get the money we need. Mm-hmm. And that's the other issue is some, and I have no idea on this professor in this area, but one reason so many states and so many politicians are against homeschooling is because states have a financial motive mm-hmm. to get children into those local schools, because just like our local school, it gets funding based on the number of students they have in attendance, the number of students that don't drop out, the number of students that pass the standardized test. They have financial motives, and just even among different districts. And I'll give you one quick example. My granddaughter will be at the age where she can start kindergarten in the near future. And she lives about 3 miles from an elementary school. But because that elementary school is in another county, they want her, and if my daughter decides to send her to kindergarten and not homeschool, instead they want her to travel the 14 or 15 miles by bus or by car to the elementary school that's in her county mm-hmm. instead of allowing her to go to the one that's nearest. That's because each district has those financial motivations to try to bring in as many students as they can, and they're very, very, very tight when it comes to allowing a student to cross county borders and go to a different school or go to a school that's on the other side of the county that's outside of their school district. There are many, many, many motives behind some of the anti-homeschool movements that are going on. There's no one single reason. It's not just because this individual hates Christians and thinks homeschooling is bad. A lot of times it's a lot deeper and other motivations going on behind it, but they'll use information like in this article as a reason, say, okay, this is why we don't want homeschooling, but actuality there's other reasons, and most of the time it's financial. It generally all goes back to who's benefiting from this child going to public school. And I think one thing that may backfire because of this whole COVID incidents with the homeschooling and teachers teaching via computer, I think it has proved one thing beyond a shadow of a doubt. And I've seen it in every state I've ever lived. It's always, we need more money for education. We need more money for education. Well, no, you need to learn how to better use the resources you mm-hmm. have. And I think if nothing else comes out of this, I'm hoping that the public school systems realize they can actually do a lot more with less money if they applied it right. But that will never happen because school systems are not willing to give up the financial resources they receive. And of course, you know, no one wants to lose a job, but there are other avenues that when it comes to public education that could be, you know, done that would actually save money and actually provide better education to students. But sadly, with Common Core and these other standardized testing, it's no longer about educating the child. It's about indoctrinating the child to a certain political or ideology belief when, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it was about making sure that you could read and write and do arithmetic and, you know, higher types of math like calculus or physics or whatever. Now it's, okay, you pass this test, you don't have to worry about this anymore. Let's move on to the next thing. Or mm-hmm. they're more interested in this article, quoting this professor, proves it. They're not worried. They're not concerned about educating the child. They're more concerned about the social aspects and the political and ideological aspects of a child's education than they are the actual, you know, what we would consider truly education, like teaching history, teaching, you know, English and things along those lines. If any of that makes sense, like my tongue got a little bit tied up. But
no, you did great, brother. I absolutely agree with you. The interesting thing about, I mean, and you know, we do need to wrap things up here, about 20 minutes over our hour time, but I just want to make a last couple of quick points. the reason we address this is, again, we're not attacking public schools as entities. I mean, there's an overall, I mean, we could spend weeks talking about a lot of the underlying issues with public education, some of the history and the ideologies and the indoctrination that goes on. There's tons of that information out there. We're not trying to get into all that. We're trying to address this particular issue. Somebody claiming that homeschooling is essentially dangerous, that in your home, you're not providing enough of a meaningful education, that in all likelihood, your child faces a greater risk of child abuse and nobody will know about it. And because of all this, you as a parent shouldn't have total rights over your child. You should have significant rights so that, you know, the child will eventually be a productive member of society defined by Miss Bartlett.
Real quick, quick question. Is that not almost worded exactly like something Hillary Clinton said a few years ago about raising children?
Takes a village to raise a child, yes. And that's the thing, is that what does this all sound like? She says that the state should have authoritative control. Because guess what? If I don't have complete control over me and my child, because, well, there's a point where what I teach my child could conflict with what the state wants, then the total authoritarian is the state, not me. Well, you know, there was this guy in Germany that went by the name of Hitler that talked about that Germany's children, Germany was responsible for, that it would cede its children to no one. See, Nazi Germany did the same thing. Communists say the same thing. The children are the property of the state. Christians, according to Miss Bartlett, do not have a right to their children, not in totality. The state does, because you have to answer to the state. Let me just finish or grab the last paragraph here. Let me understand, let you see what she's thinking. She concedes, how generous of her, she concedes that in some situations, homeschooling may be justified and effective. Justified. Quote, no doubt there are some parents who are motivated and capable. Some of you are capable, not all of you. Some of you are capable of giving an education that's of a higher quality and as broad in scope as what's happening in the public schools. You remember what Rich was just talking about a minute ago? She says, but Bartlett believes that if parents want to permission, so who has the right, not the parent, the state, permission to opt out of schools, the burden of proving that their case is justified should fall on the parents. According to Bartlett, the state has ultimate authority. The state, not you as the parent. This is a hit piece against homeschooling.
But that last paragraph, aren't parents already subjected to state regulations when it comes to homeschooling? I mean, doesn't most states already have the legal means of telling you, no, you cannot homeschool your child, no, what you're teaching is not adequate? I mean, why else would they have these reporting means and ways to prove what you're teaching and that you're teaching adequately? Isn't that already in place?
It depends on the state. It varies from state to state. In Nevada, we simply had to file a statement saying, we're homeschooling, and these are the subjects that we will be covering. Some states are more, this is going to sound bad, but intrusive. They want to know, they want tests. They want to see grades. They want to see reports that this is going on. So depending on where you go, and each state's going to be different. So some have that rule, some don't. And that's what bugs Bartlett. She wants everybody like that.
Let me ask you this, based on your observations and interactions over the years. Is it the more liberal, progressive states that require the more regulations, that require the more reporting, that require the more proof of what's going on than, say, a conservative state?
I can't say that conclusively because obviously I haven't learned what all 50 states require, but I can certainly see, you know, you go into, you know, somewhere like New York or something, homeschooling's a lot tougher. It's a lot tougher to get permission to homeschool. You come to, you know, to Nevada, it's different. Now, I can guarantee you there are people within my legislature who have fought to try and change that. Our previous governor made it possible for the money that goes into the state coffers that there could be money given back to parents to use in homeschooling. Now, we didn't take it because when the government gives something, there's always a string attached. It may not get pulled under one governor, but it'll get pulled under another. But so it's just going to depend on your state. And I can assure you that there are legislators in my state, especially now because we've got Democrats running everything, that given the opportunity, they're going to fight to change what we've got going on. That may take time, and there's certainly a lot of people who are sympathetic to the homeschooling movement here in Nevada that would fight that fight, but it's going to depend on each state. And the simple thing is that if you know, this idea that like nobody would ever find out if there was abuse going on in the home, if that's the case, how does any child ever get discovered from being abused? It's not just schools that report it. So, if there's neglect going on and a child is a dunderhead because nothing's ever been taught to him, it's going to get discovered. That the simple fact is that kid has, gets out there and makes contact with the world, his inability to articulate himself, read anything, those things are going to be discovered. Yeah, according to Bartlett, that never can happen under a homeschooling movement. That's the problem. She has painted the picture as so dire that the homeschooling movement has to be stopped right now until more restrictive measures are in place, and then you as a parent must prove why you can't put your kid doesn't go to a public school. That's what bothers me. She has completely rejected the notion that there's any good education happening in a homeschool movement. And I'll tell you right now, if that's the case, I'd like to see her response to some of the studies that have been done that show homeschoolers routinely outscore their public school. In fact, it's funny that, the Harvard Magazine locked down the comments after 9 comments, just 9, in which every single one of them, including a liberal, excoriated them for this, and even noted the fact that kids in homeschool environments outscore public school students. Of course, what was really funny, I gotta bring this up. The artist for this article, a Robert Neubecker, draws this picture, and it's a house with bars on the windows. And on the side of the house, you got this sad-looking little child looking out as all their friends are playing around the house. Like, homeschoolers never let their kids ever play with kids. And on the side of the house are 4 books: reading, writing, arithmetic, and Bible. When this article first came out, arithmetic was spelled A-R-I-T-H-M-A-T-I-C. You homeschoolers know that that's spelled incorrect. It has since been changed quietly to A-R-I-T-H-M-E-T-I-C, the correct spelling. They were excoriated. And I think personally, and I think others have said it, that the misspelling was done intentionally to kind of slap the homeschoolers in the face. And when they got called out for it, they quietly changed it and locked down the comments. But I would love to see her interact with the statistics to talk about the actual test scores for college entrance exams. Homeschoolers score very well. Go ahead.
I was going to say, actually, brother, I can't remember the numbers, but where 2 out of 3 public school students do not graduate college based on the ones that go to college, the graduation rate of homeschooled individuals was far greater than that of public school when it came to graduating college. But real fast, I want to ask you one question.
Sure.
When it comes to the quality of education that homeschool children receive versus public school and the qualifications of the parent that's teaching the children, do you think that Well, of course, there are some out there teaching their children in homeschool that do not have the educational level that they need to actually teach the child. But do you think that if a parent is going to the effort of homeschooling a child, do you think that parent is going to pursue their own educational level to ensure that what they're teaching their children is accurate and that they're doing it above and beyond what, say, a normal public school teacher might would do because they are concerned about their own children and they're wanting to see their own children succeed academically? Do you think that homeschool parents or homeschool teachers, should they be forced to take classes or to pass certain state tests to be qualified to be homeschool teachers?
No, absolutely not. And the reason I say that is, I'll link this in the show notes. Vodi Baucom does a great video presentation called Children of Caesar, talking about homeschooling movement, how he, and his statement, and the reason it's called Children of Caesar, is he says, when we send our children to public school, and he references it to as something that happened in the Roman era, he says, when we send our children to school, it's like sending them to Caesar. If we send them to Caesar, we shouldn't be surprised that they come back as Romans. In other words, you know, when Rome educated, the people came out as Romans. If we send them into the secular humanist environment, we shouldn't be surprised that they come out secular humanists. And so he makes reference to this particular issue and actually cites over and over again where people who people like Miss Bartlett would say are unqualified to teach produced kids while homeschooling them that outscored their peers. Why? Because you have a parent who is, dealing with one or two or maybe four or five kids in a home, devoting individual time and going to the trouble of learning the material that's in the curriculum that they have, working with the kids individually to help them find the answers. And like in our home, look, my kids are getting to a level of math I can't handle. So what do? We go to the materials that exist when it comes to math. You have no idea how many YouTube videos exist to help you with fractions. I'll tell you that right now. the resources that exist that will help you understand how to conjugate a verb, how to do sentence diagramming, how to help you learn. We now have videos from our curriculum that actually do lab work for biology and earth science. Okay, so there is tons of material that a parent in search of the best way to teach their children can find. You don't need to be a master's degree educated teacher to teach.
You mean the parents are actually benefiting from teaching their children?
Shocking.
And homeschooling the... Wow, that's amazing.
That's what I'm saying is, like, look, Bartlett makes no reference to the plethora. Hey, I used a big word, and I'm a homeschool teacher. Plethora of materials that exist. The resources, the organizations, the cooperative groups, the videos, the curriculum, the conferences, the speakers that you can get information from to help you. Guess what? The homeschooling industry is an industry. There is tons of stuff being bought and sold in the homeschool curriculum industry. But according to Bartlett, no, you can't provide a meaningful education. You're too dumb and you don't know what you need. But yet,
let me ask you.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to ask you, would you encourage our Christian brothers and sisters to homeschool their children? Would you encourage them to find some way and go above and beyond what they feel like is their own limitations to, even if it means scaling back the size of their home or income, would you encourage them to homeschool and throw everything else aside?
Yes, absolutely I would. Because here's the thing, and this is that when I say this, I sometimes get in trouble, and I'm not trying to, and I'm not trying to insult anybody. But here's the thing. God gave you those children. And there are commands in Scripture about that we can look to the principles of what God said and who he gave the job to teach. And when it came to like teaching Israel, you know, the teaching the children of Israel the laws of God, he told the fathers, you teach them when you get up, you get, teach them when they lie down, you teach them when you sit, when you teach them when you stand, you teach them when you come in, you teach them when you go out. The obligation God gave was to the parent, the father, the grandfather, to teach. So we, now obviously we're not Israel, we're not teaching the, you know, the those things as they were, you know, such as the feasts and all those things. We teach the Bible. I mean, our kids are doing a you know, an Old Testament, you know, overview class right now. We teach them scripture, but the command was for us as parents to teach. So again, this is where I'm going to get yelled at, because everybody's going to say, you're telling people that if they put them in public school, they're sinning. It's not what I said. Don't, if you accuse me of that, I'm not going to respond to you, because it's not what I said. But we as parents are given a duty to teach our children. We are given a duty to teach our children. And guess what? Up until the day we hand them off to their first kindergarten teacher, we were teaching them. We taught them from the moment they came out of the womb till we handed them to a public school teacher. When they come home, we're still teaching them, because we're helping them with their schoolwork. We're teaching them their colors, their words. They're teaching how to read. You taught your children, and you teach them every day of your life. So if I could encourage you to take them out of a system that Miss Bartholet wants to conform to her image, which is nothing but a secular humanist drone-making machine, do I want you to take your children out? Yes, because those are your precious children that God gave to you. I recognize that there are some circumstances it just can't happen. And I can't make this like a hard and fast rule and somehow you're in sin if you're not doing this. But if I can encourage you to be the one that is teaching your child according to the word of God, to love, honor, and cherish his word, to learn all these things in the world, point us back to God, absolutely I would. And I know it's hard, but it can be done. Go ahead.
The command in the Bible to teach our children, is that limited to just teaching the things of the Bible, or does it also apply to things such as arithmetic and history?
Well, if God is a God over all these things, and the psalmist talks about how the glories, the heavens speak the glories of God, and you know Solomon talks about the air currents as they flow in his writings in the Proverbs, can we not deduce that if everything speaks of God, that we can teach all these subjects and have them point back to God? I think absolutely it expands to all of that. And like I said, it's that passage is a principle I think we could look at as an overarching principle that we are the people that God has given the authority to be the teachers of our children. That's God saying that I want you to do this. You be involved. And because guess what? We never lose that. We never lose the ability to teach because we send them to school. We're still teaching them every single day. But there's a machine out there that people like Bartholet want to rip them out of that Christian environment and get them into a humanist perspective that they can turn them into worker drones and do what they want with them. And that's why you have an entire generation of millennials and Gen Y and Gen Z who think that socialism is the answer, which is totally anti-God.
Well, I just want to say one thing in closing. And this, our show is for Christians. Chris and I are Christians, and of course, everything that we say, we approach from a Christian worldview, which is a biblical worldview, which is the only voice of reason in this world. But if you're a Christian and you have the capability of homeschooling and you're not doing it, first ask yourself why, and if at all possible, I would encourage you to homeschool your children. There is a way to do it, but keep this in mind also. You get your child up in the morning, and they go to school. They get home from school around 3:30, 3:45. From, say, 3:30 till 9 o'clock at night when they go to bed. How much time are you interacting with that child? On average, one report I saw is that from day to day, a parent interacts with their child on average 2.5 to 3 hours a day. Who's influencing the other 20 or 21 hours a day? What are they being told? What are they watching? What are they listening to? They go to church maybe one day a week, and you know, they may attend Sunday school for an hour and then have an hour of preaching. What are they being taught and learned during the week at public school? What are they being told? Especially for someone, say, in fifth or sixth grade, that age range, they're being told one thing at church, they're being told something else at school. Who's going to have more influence on them? All the kids around them and the teachers they're exposed to every day, all day long, or the pastor that they sit in front of for maybe an hour a week? As things that we need, as Christians and Christian parents, we need to keep in mind and consider, because as Chris said, we're commanded to teach our children, and that commandment is not limited to just the Bible. And sadly, for most Christians in America, they're not even teaching them the Bible, much less anything else. So why are you surprised when your child graduates high school, goes off to college, and comes home and tells you that now they're a homosexual, they're voting Democrat, they think everyone should have all these rights, that you know, Bernie Sanders should be our next president? Why are you shocked? Why are you surprised when this happens, when you've done nothing to prevent it, when you've done nothing to teach them biblically and to teach them to think biblically? Just kind of something I wanted to lay on everyone. And if you feel bad, if you feel guilty over it, I'm sorry, but I'm just telling you not only how I feel, but what I truly believe are the facts.
And folks, please understand, we preface this at the very beginning to say we get that there are good schools out there and good school teachers and good school administrators, that in no way, shape, or form were we trying to be derogatory against them. We wanted to challenge your thinking with regard to this article and the arguments that it makes, and they are ongoing articles that have been refuted and responded to for decades. This type of argumentation is not unknown to the homeschooling movement. Everybody's heard them. Even the people who responded to this before they locked down the article made comments of like, this is woefully out of date material. You're still making the same old arguments. And it's because these arguments are emotionally driven. They give you a belief that, oh my goodness, I'm going to deprive my child in some way. And those ignorant hillbilly homeschoolers are going to wreck the culture, and the kids are going to get abused in the process. That's what this essentially is arguing for. So, what was the point of challenging you with this article? That when you read something like this, engage your brain. What is being said? What is not being said? What is being implied? What are the assertions that are and presuppositions being brought to the table? And where is the evidence lacking? And I can assure you, even in that 80-page article with a lot of citations and possibly some good arguments, as Rich said, there is a lot of assertion and a lot of heavy bias that does not allow for actual intelligent discussion and examination of the topic. It is a hit piece. Because, and I think, Rich, you pointed out earlier, it's amazing that Harvard put this out. This is a 2019 80-page article. Why now in the May-June magazine of Harvard Magazine? Because guess what? All whole across the country, everybody's doing some kind of homeschooling. That's why it was put out now. Harvard could have done this in one of their magazines earlier. No, they did this now because of what's going on. They want everybody terrified so that when the schools resume in the fall, which they probably will, all the parents will go, put them back in school. So that's what this is about. Don't fail to recognize that. Engage it, understand it, and be able to articulate those arguments to the people who will read stuff like this and come to you and go, well, homeschooling is just dumb. It's so destructive. Is it really? So, all right. 1 hour and 45 minutes, way mega-sized Voice of Reason Radio. There was just a lot there, and I don't think we could have done justice to just spend an hour on it. And I think good discussion overall. I hope it was informative to you. We really thank you for spending your time with us, especially on a topic like this. It's not one of the more exciting ones. It's not the COVID stuff. It's not, you know, it's not political stuff. It's not the newest and latest internet argument on whatever theological issues. This is just one of those things that we try to bring into this program that challenges you to think through these issues and how to ask questions and really engage your mind, because God gave it to you and He expects you to use it properly. So, Rich, any last thoughts before we let everybody go?
Well, I could ramble on for another 30 minutes, but I will bow out. And I do agree, there are some really great public school teachers out there. I have 3 children. All 3 went through public school, but I will say this. Not every teacher they had was what I would call a great public school teacher. Mm-hmm. During the course of my 3 children, from kindergarten till they graduated, which, you know, 12th grade, there were some good ones, there were some bad ones, and there was some that I would like to have taken a hickory stick to their backside. So I'll leave it on that.
Okay. Well, thank you, folks, for being with us. Thank you for spending your time, even an elongated episode like this one. We really appreciate you. We're grateful. We hope we've challenged you to think things through. We will try to find something that's maybe not such a aggravating topic for next show. But thank you for spending your time with us. God bless you guys. Good night. We'll see you next time.